I think we'd all agree that 80 million years is a long time to survive without sex. But the Deloid rotifers have managed to do it. And apparently, these microscopic creatures have done it by finding an alternative solution to procreation. You see, sex, apart from its other benefits, allows genes to be mixed and matched, providing fodder for evolution and enabling species to change in response to their environment. Animal species that abandon sex tend not to last very long. But Deloid rotifers have lasted a very long time without sex and seem to adapt very well to new circumstances. In fact, they're extremely tough little creatures, able to survive completely drying out like tiny little invertebrate mummies. And Professor Alan Tunnicliffe at the University of Cambridge thinks he may have figured out what their secret to survival is. They don't bother swapping genes with sexual partners. They steal them instead. Professor Tunnicliffe, welcome to Quirks and Quarks.
Hello, nice to be here.
Well, first of all, tell me a little bit about Deloid rotifers. What kind of creatures are they?
They're very inconspicuous. It's not the kind of creature you'd meet walking down the street. You have to go looking for them in little puddles and other temporary pools of water. And you need a microscope because they're less than a millimeter long. So, for example, the species we worked on for the paper we're going to discuss was found in an Australian billabong, which is a temporary pool in Australia. But the other species we work on came from my back garden where we have a bird bath. And this particular family has some very strange characteristics.
Strange characteristics? What do you mean by that?
Well, this desiccation tolerance is certainly one of them. It's not something that you or I could survive. We lose very little of our water and we die. But these, I was going to say guys, but they're not guys, they're all girls, they're all females. They lose essentially all of their water, and that doesn't seem to worry them. They come back to life when you add water again. The other thing is they're asexual, as you pointed out in the head there. So they've been asexual for around 80 million years, as you say, and that's extremely unusual.
When you say they dry out, how long can they stay in that state?
The best documented sample is about 9 years old, but probably longer than that.
9 years?
Yeah.
Holy smokes. And what state are they in when they're dried up like that?
They don't look like anything alive. They're sort of curled up and they look like a bit of rubbish in the bottom of a tube. But you just add water and within a few minutes they will start looking rather beautiful, like a fully hydrated rotifer does.
If they're asexual, how do they reproduce?
They're all girls and they have girl babies. They just lay eggs and these develop into mature females.
So they clone themselves?
Exactly.
Well, how did you discover that they were stealing DNA?
Well, I should say, you never do anything in isolation in science. And there was a group in the States who'd shown a few years ago that this might have been happening. They found a lot of foreign genes in the ends of some of the chromosomes of a species of Deloid rotifer. So we wanted to know, just how extensive this phenomenon was. Well, the first thing we did was look at the transcribed genes, what we call the transcriptome, and all the sequences that are represented there. And it turns out in roughly 10% of cases, the most similar sequence in the database is from other sources. They come from mainly from bacteria, but also from algae, even from whole plants, fungi, and other types of simple organism.
How many different creatures were the source of these foreign genes?
Well, our best guess is at least 500.
Well, how are they actually stealing this DNA from other organisms?
Yeah, this is very intriguing. They basically will eat anything that they can fit in their mouths, right? So any kind of organic debris that they find in their environments, they will gobble up. And so we think of, if you think about what's lying around in their environment, there'll be lots of dead animals, dead bacteria, maybe living bacteria, and other types of living small organisms which they just hoover up and eat. And all of these things will be full of DNA. So they must be able to access this DNA, which they're eating, and then somehow incorporate that into their cells and in particular into their germline. Now, exactly how they do that, we don't know. We think it might be related to their desiccation tolerance again, their ability to survive desiccation. One thing we know is that when organisms do dry out, a couple of things happen. One thing that happens is that their DNA starts to break. There's a biochemical stress which results from desiccation, resulting in DNA breakage. Now, that's not a problem for the rotifers because they can repair those breaks when they see water again. But when that happens, it's possible that some foreign DNA from some other species can kind of sneak in there and get into the join where these bits of broken DNA are being joined. So that's one thing. The other thing that happens when cells dry out and animals dry out is their membranes become leaky. So they lose their integrity, if you like. So that means it's easier for things to get in from outside, including DNA. So the combination of these two things, the membranes being leaky and the chromosomes breaking and then being repaired, is probably how the DNA gets into the animal's genes.
Now, how is this ability to absorb DNA from other organisms helping them to adapt to their environments?
Well, that, again, is difficult to quantitate. We think because these genes are expressed that they must be doing something useful for the animal. But when you actually look at what these genes are, we find that most of them are encoding enzymes. So they have something to do with the biochemistry in the animal. And quite a lot of that biochemistry that results from these foreign genes is something we don't normally see in animals. So, for example, we've mentioned in the paper we published, we mentioned that some of these genes may help to detoxify compounds that they come across in the environment, which should normally harm the animals. They may even be able to go further than that and use these compounds as sources of energy, so sources of food. So they convert nasty things into yummy things. They can then eat them. They also do other things. These genes might help the delloid cope with various forms of stress. So in a stressful environment, then maybe they can survive better than an animal which doesn't contain these genes.
How unusual is it for an animal to be stealing genes from other organisms?
For bacteria, very simple organisms like bacteria, it's now thought to be a very common thing. However, amongst animals, it's supposed to be quite unusual.
So would you say then that this stealing genes is sort of an alternative to sexual reproduction, another way of mixing up the gene pool?
It probably is for the rotifer, because it's just going on at such a high level. Perhaps not for other organisms like human beings, for example. It's pretty rare in humans, but there is evidence that some of this is going on in humans as well.
Well, stealing genes is an interesting alternative, but I think I still prefer the old-fashioned way.
Indeed, yes, you and I both. But, they're happy enough. They've survived for so many million years, they must be happy enough.
Dr. Tunnicliffe, thank you very much.
Nice to talk to you.
Professor Alan Tunnicliffe teaches molecular biotechnology at the University of Cambridge in England. And that's it for this week's edition of Quirks and Quarks. Next week, Planet Without Apes. Are we wiping our closest relatives off the face of the Earth? If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can write to Quirks and Quarks, P.O. Box 500, Station A, Toronto, Ontario, M5W1E6. Our email is quirks@cbc.ca. And to get to our webpage, just go to cbc.ca/quirks, where you can subscribe to our podcast, listen to our audio archives, follow us on Twitter and Facebook at CBC Quirks, and read our latest blog. Quirks and Quarks is produced by Jim Hanman, Jim Lebbins, and Mark Crawley, with technical help from Tim Lorimer. I'm Bob McDonald. Thanks for listening.